We're joined on the phone now by Lee Freilich. He is the director of the Center for Forest Ecology at the University of Minnesota, and he is an expert in forest disturbance, including fire. Good evening, Lee.
Good evening. Nice to be with you.
Thank you for being here tonight. So we wanted to talk to you, of course, because of the Pagami Creek fire happening up here. And first of all, tell us a little bit about what you study at the Center for Forest Ecology and why fire is of interest to you.
Well, we study a lot of things relating to forest ecology, including fires and windstorms in boreal forests. We also study the effect of deer and moose grazing and eating plants and tree seedlings in the forest, invasive species like buckthorn and European earthworms, and also not only the boreal forest in the boundary waters, but the big woods, maple, basswood in southern Minnesota, and the hemlock forest in upper Michigan, and some other projects all around the world, in Poland and Estonia and places like that, which have forests that are actually quite similar to Minnesota.
Okay. So why is the boundary waters an incredible place to study forest disturbance?
Well, it's my main study site because it's so large and it has a huge area that has never been logged. So we can see what the impact of the natural disturbance regime by itself is without the influence of logging. But then there are some areas that were logged, so we can compare areas with only natural disturbance and areas with human-caused disturbance. And, of course, it's a big enough area that some of these big fires can run across the landscape, and you just can't study these big disturbances in many other places.
You were actually in our area during the Ham Lake fire in 2007, right?
Yes. I was on a wilderness trip on Seagull Lake with two friends when the fire started, and we ended up being trapped there and watching the fire, you know, as the Gunflint Trail was evacuated. We were watching from the other side, though, and we were trapped just as much by the wind and the waves because we were in canoes and the water was very cold. It was just a few days after ice out. As the fire itself, and so we had to stay there until it finally calmed down enough. And when we came out of the wilderness at Trails End Campground, the campground was just torching up at that point. So as we were escorted down the Gunflint Trail, the telephone poles were on fire, and, you know, we were escorted to, of course, the Gunflint Lodge where the command center was. And then I did all sorts of media interviews about the forest ecologists trapped by the fire.
Mm-hmm. It was probably a little closer research study than you had planned on.
Yeah, it was a huge surprise, but that fire blew up so fast, like a lot of fires do. It was a little puff of smoke, and then all of a sudden the whole sky was full of smoke, and it was headed right towards us, and we had to go to the other side of the lake to get away from it. And yeah, it was a very unexpected emphasis for the trip. We ended up not going anywhere for the whole trip, but it was still the most exciting canoe trip I was ever on.
I can imagine. So I assume that since 2007, you've done quite a bit of research on that area and what happened. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, and in fact, we have some graduate students who are working there to study the different successional patterns that are created by combinations such as blown down and then burned, or blown down only from the 1999 blowdown, or burned only. Some of the areas were blown down and burned in wildfires like Cavity Lake and Ham Lake, and some areas were blown down and then burned by some of the prescribed fires that the Forest Service did, and we think these will cause a different type of forest to develop in these areas with different disturbance histories. And that seems to be what our preliminary results are.
As far as different kinds of plants or different proportions of plants,
yeah,
and trees coming in?
Yeah, and basically the blowdown followed by fire is leading to a forest dominated by birch, whereas blowdown alone is leading to a forest dominated by spruce, fir, and cedar. And burning alone gives you the traditional jack pine and black spruce mixture with a few red and white pine mixed in, which has historically been so common in the Boundary Waters.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about this current fire. We just spoke with Ron Sanow, who is a information officer for the fire right now, and he was saying that it's the largest fire in Minnesota in the last 100 years. So if the fire travels and runs into the blowdown, what kind of fire behavior would you expect there?
Well, if it hits the blowdown, the main body of the blowdown is to the north of the fire right now, but I understand the winds are switching to the south now, so it might move in that direction. If it hits the main part of the blowdown there between Snowbank Lake and Alpine Lake, the part that wasn't burned out by the Cavity Lake fire or any of the prescribed burns, the intensity of the fire will really go up because of the type of fuel, all those logs and branches from all the blown down trees. And then, as I said earlier, the areas that blew down and didn't burn yet have lots of smaller, younger spruce and fir coming in. And they are extremely flammable, too, because of the pitch that they have and all of the needles that they have, you know, which can really catch fire very explosively. And, of course, it's a severe drought, so their foliage is very dry. So you combine all of that spruce and fir with a heavy loading of logs and branches from the blowdown, and it would be quite a scene. I imagine it would be a plume-dominated fire creating its own cumulonimbus cloud, and very high intensity. There would be no containment of such a fire. The only thing that could be done would be to get people out of the way.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Lee Frelick. He's the director of the Center for Forest Ecology at the University of Minnesota and an expert on the boreal forest and disturbances of the forest. Lee, we all know that fire is a natural part of the weather and of our climate, and it happens from lightning strikes and so forth. Tell us a little bit about some of the benefits of wildfire to plants or certain wildlife.
Well, in the Boundary Waters, almost all of the tree species are actually fire dependent. They can hardly reproduce at all in the absence of fire. So for one thing, for the forest to renew itself and maintain the species, especially jack pine and black spruce, for example, which have closed cones, which don't even open unless there's a fire, to maintain these species, fire is necessary. And not only that, fire also maintains a mosaic across the landscape of forest of different ages and different stages of succession. And we know that different wildlife species use forests of different ages, so having a mosaic with all different ages present will support a wider variety of wildlife. One specific example, which has been talked about in the media in the last few days, is the moose. Young birch saplings, which we think will be very abundant in this burned area and also are very abundant in the Hammond Lake and Cavity Lake burns, are one of the favorite food sources for moose. And, of course, after a fire, these new saplings come up and they're short, and the foliage and the twigs are within reach of the moose. Whereas in a 60- or 80-year-old birch forest, most of that is way up in the canopy, way out of the reach. So having some of these younger patches of forest, and especially birch-dominated forest, should help the situation for moose, because the population has been declining.
Yes, and actually we're going to have a program on that, our first Thursday community conversation, the first Thursday in October, about the moose population. So people can hear more about that. Other wildlife, how are they affected?
Well, black-backed woodpeckers like recently burned areas, the standing dead trees, the ones that are killed but that don't fall over, that have beetles living in the dead wood and so on. And so black-backed woodpeckers become more abundant in the several years after a forest fire. We hardly saw any black-backed woodpeckers for years and years until we had these big disturbances. And now when you go out in the Seagull Lake area, you see a dozen of them in a day. So the bird communities respond to this as well. And it's just good to have a balance of different age classes. And, of course, some of the warblers and the smaller songbirds like older forests. So it's important not to go too much in one direction, not too much to young and not too much to old, but to always have a balance so that warblers and black-backed woodpeckers and moose and fishers, you know, which like older forests, so that they all have a place to live.
Mm-hmm. Lee, what are your plans for studying the effects of this particular fire?
Well, it's a little early to talk about that, but I think we might be able to include it in some of our studies of how forest that was never logged and forest that has been logged, if they respond differently. The Ham Lake and Cavity Lake fires are almost all in forest that was never logged. This fire, however, has burned a substantial area of second growth forest because a big chunk of the south central part of the Boundary Waters Wilderness had been logged prior to establishment of the wilderness area. So it was second growth forest, and it'll be interesting to see if second growth forest responds in a different way than forest that has never been logged. And the fire, actually, the Pagami Creek fire started in areas that had never been logged and burned probably 10 or 20,000 acres of that, and now they've moved into the second growth. So that'll be a very interesting contrast that we have not looked at before.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you have multiple research projects going on. Where are the other forests that you're studying right now?
Well, in addition to the study at the end of the Gunflint there, we also have some studies going on the Echo Trail. We have some mapped plots in the Hegman Lake area and the Kwishwe Lake area that we mapped years ago. In Upper Michigan, we have an old-growth hemlock and maple forest that was never logged in Sylvania Wilderness area. And we had mapped all the trees on 67 acres there between 1988 and 1990, and we just recently did a resurvey of those trees to see which ones died, how much the surviving ones grew, did any new trees enter the forest, and so on. And we were absolutely shocked to discover that virtually no hemlock or yellow birch trees had been recruited in that forest in the last 20 years because the deer were eating virtually every last one, and even sugar maple, which is not one of the deer's favorite foods, is kind of in the middle of their preference list, is not reproducing in great abundance anymore. When we were there in 1990, the forest floor was carpeted. It was solid green, and in fact, you couldn't even see where you were putting your feet when you were walking. There were so many sugar maple seedlings, and now the forest floor is virtually barren. All you see is the brown leaf litter.
Interesting. It's got to be quite a job to map 60-some acres of trees.
Yeah. I think it's about 20,000 trees. but if you have the right type of a laser surveying station, you can set that in one spot and get several hundred trees from one location. You just send your laser beam out to each tree, and it gives you the X and Y coordinates very precisely, you know, relative to the base. The 0-0 coordinate, which is at the southwest corner, so it's just like a map, you know. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you the elevation of each tree at its base, so you can construct a very detailed topographic map of the forest. And it is very interesting because you can see if one species of tree grows better if it's surrounded by the same species than if it's surrounded by other species.
Mm-hmm.
And those will be types of analyses that we will be doing with that data now that we have it.
Lee, where can people go to learn more about your work if they're interested?
Well, they can go to the Center for Forest Ecology website. And I actually don't know the whole address, but if you type it in Google, the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, and you can click on my name there, and you can look at all my publications. A lot of them are even available for download as a PDF. And there are lots of pictures of the various study sites that I work at. So that's the place to go.
Okay, well, I know you're really in demand by the media during this fire, and so I really want to thank you for your time this evening. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's good.
Okay, well, we certainly appreciate your time and hope to see you up here again soon.
Okay, well, you're most welcome.
Thank you, Lee.
All right.